A good thing to do is to spend time with what the Spokane Symphony is up to every time we have a classics concert. And this one sounds fascinating to me. It is it's a Russian-oriented program, although one could certainly make many questions about that, and especially with the addition of Arvo Pärt. But we won't get too political right off the bat when we have those people that weren't really so compatible as people. Prokofiev and Shostakovich represented, and then Arvo Pärt on the concert, which is Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. Morihiko Nakahara, welcome back.
Thank you.
I know that
you
do sneak into town from time to time and conduct things, and you're our stealth conductor. They have these adjectives for conductors. I think we should call you the stealth conductor.
Really?
Yeah, I think that
spy
that,
or something. Okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Stealth conductor.
Yeah, and so
nice.
And so you've already been here this year, but now this is a good one to have you in for this big thing. And especially, I'm going to just jump right into it, the Prokofiev Third Symphony. It's rare. It's seldom heard, and I'll come right out and say it, and then you can argue with me. It's weird.
It is. No, I'm not going to argue with you. It is weird, yeah. But, you know, also what's interesting is that Eckhart conducted it like back in 2010 or something.
Oh, really?
It is seldom heard,
yeah.
But in this town,
okay,
I mean,
good.
It's like the second go at it, like in 10 years. But, you know, it is an interesting symphony because, you know, first of all, most of the musical materials he ended up basically recycling, right? The musical materials from the opera, mm-hmm. The Fiery Angel, which deals with, you know, witchcraft and exorcism and, you know, It's like a Stephen King novel, basically, mm-hmm. Right? Plot-wise. But, you know, the opera was never produced in his life, so he wanted to kind of recycle the material and created this symphony, which, you know, one can say that compared to the opera, you know, it's a better, like, concentration of synthesis mm-hmm. of all the materials. Mm-hmm. I think the symphony version works better, almost. Mm-hmm. It is in four movements. It ends in very like brutal ending. It's not one of those, like, compared to like the Fifth Symphony of Prokofiev, it's not one of those like a feel good symphony at the end. And it is very difficult, you know, to put together. Even though the orchestra did it maybe like 10 years ago. So it's still, you know, it's not something that falls easily under the fingers. So, yeah.
And the general sound of it, to the extent, and I don't know it very well, but the general sound of it is and isn't Prokofiev, is kind of my, there's plenty of Prokofiev things that one recognizes, the large melodies
right.
and things like that. But then there's some sounds that he creates that I think are kind of unique to this piece.
Yeah, there are moments of it. And there are moments of these just gorgeous melodies similar to like Cinderella ballet. There are also moments in there that really reminds us on stage of something like the big moments of Alexander Nevsky or something like that.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, but then in the what is essentially a scherzo movement, the third movement, he divides the strings into like 13 different parts. And the sound that comes out of it is just so almost shrill, and you know it's a very like unsettling kind of writing that he creates that you don't often see in his more popular works, I would say. But it's also interesting even when he does give us a gorgeous melody to play, it's written in such a way that there's always an element of suspense and spookiness. So, like, let's say the horns will play this gorgeous melody, violins are doubling them, but instead of simply doubling them, they're adding all these, like, glissandos, all these kind of, you know, unnerving trills, all these color effects around the same theme. And the effect, you know, when you can balance it right, it's stunning.
The word fantastic is overused as an adjective, and I rather like it as a noun, in a sense, with Prokofiev, because it is it's a whole way of being, kind of in the sound of what Prokofiev does.
And I, you know, I love, he's one of my favorite composers. So, you know, this like every season, I always look forward to working on a piece by Prokofiev. And so, you know, this season, I didn't program this concert, right? So the Third Symphony, obvious, you know, like I've done the Fifth Symphony, I've done the Classical Symphony, of course, many times, a lot of the concertos, Nevsky, Romeo and Juliet, and so on. But, you know, Third Symphony, it took me a while to be able to really dig deep into it and really, you know, to love the piece, right? But it is sort of one of those hidden treasures.
It is, yeah.
Of the repertoire. And yeah, so I'm looking, and the orchestra is, you know, doing a bang up job of it right now. So looking forward to performing that.
Yeah, I think it's a really great opportunity to encounter this relatively rare piece. And then is the Arvo Pärt, Trisagion, mm-hmm. how do you say it? Is that the opening piece of the concert?
Yeah,
what's the order of things? Yeah.
So we start with Arvo Pärt, and so, yeah, when we, you know, the theme, I think the theme Jeff came up with, mm-hmm. our executive director, is Soviet transcendence or something like that, right? So that's why we have Shostakovich and Prokofiev, sort of the two giants of composers.
Who had to do plenty of transcending
right,
in their lives.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a touch of genius to open actually with Arvo Pärt's music because, as you said, you know, he's Estonian composer. When he was training as a young composer, you know, he wasn't allowed to really study. I mean, you know, the way they worked in former Soviet Union when Pärt was growing up as a young composer, you know, he studied Prokofiev, he studied Shostakovich, and that was about it at that time. And he experimented a little bit with serialism, like 12-tone music, and he was, you know, immediately called upon by the authorities for being too avant-garde. You know, eventually he was allowed to leave and move to, settled in Berlin. He is now a German citizen. So back in like 1980, he was allowed to leave Estonia. And by way of Vienna, ended up in Berlin. So but now he's, after, you know, now the last 10 years or so, he's gone back and forth. He has a place in Estonia and Germany, so he goes back and forth. But, you know, during the whole process, he found solace, I think, in studying old music, you know, Gregorian chants, Renaissance music, and that became sort of his signature style. Is this very simple? Not simple is kind of almost a bad way to describe it, but everything is just so distilled to the core essence. So he can create these, and it's, you know, when you look at his scores, there aren't a lot of fast notes, usually. They're not necessarily easy to perform because it's just so, you know, when everything is so simplified to that core essence, it almost makes it more difficult to do it right. And so it's a fascinating piece of music. You know, every time we do like Arvo Pärt, that is a very interesting experience for us musicians because, you know, we think all this should be easy to put together, but not necessarily. I mean, it's just everything, you have to do it so perfectly.
Well,
to make it sound right.
Let's talk to another musician who plays Arvo Pärt by way of introducing Joshua Roman back.
Yes.
Hey, Joshua.
Hi.
Great to have you back in town on your third, fourth occasion or more.
Something more and more, I think.
Like,
fourth or
fifth,
right?
Or sixth.
And so jump on what Marjika was just saying about Arvo Pärt, because you were just talking about Fratres. What's your feeling about playing and being part of and having Arvo Pärt get inside you?
Well, Marjika is right. It's very, I think it's a big challenge to be that direct. And it is simple. I'm not afraid of saying that it's simple. I think that simplicity and ease are different things. And when you, Pärt has this great quote about the complex and multifaceted being to him only confusing. And he wants to find within whatever he's writing, he wants to find the one thing that really matters. What is this thing? What's the most direct way that he can get to it? And so he spent, as you said earlier, you know, he did some time with serialism, but then he let all of that go and he spent a lot of time creating his signature style, which I can't pronounce, the tintinnabuli.
Oh, that's right.
but it is, it's the basic elements of music, and he's really cutting to the heart, in my feeling of it, he's really cutting to the heart of what makes us feel when we listen to music. And he's getting rid of all of you know, in the Baroque era, you see all of these figurations around everything, both in architecture and music, also in art. And we compare classical style to that and say it's very clean. Well, Perrot is even more clean than that. Yeah. Perrot has gotten rid of almost everything but the very essence of what it is that he's trying to communicate. And that's so difficult because you have to go there and you have to be there to communicate it. And it's something you have to have inside, and you also have to be trained to have what's inside come out through your body to an instrument and communicate that. So it requires a lot of presence. I've been playing a lot of Perrot recently, and that's the thing that always comes up. You really have to be so present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Josh Roman, who's playing Shostakovich with the symphony, and even as we start talking about Shostakovich, you're a composer yourself. You've recently written a cello concerto, so you know probably from the inside the perils and the opportunities of writing a cello concerto. So let's just double right down on the famous one, the Shostakovich First Cello Concerto, so well known, so often played, and I'm sure you've played it many, many times. But what is kind of the essence of the piece? Where was Shostakovich coming from, and how did he do it?
Well, there's this great scene in a movie, and I can't remember the name of the movie off the top of my head, but it's something that Shostakovich had written music for. And there is a theme that was very close to the opening theme of the cello concerto. And or maybe he just wrote about this movie. But there's this scene of soldiers just sort of marching, and I think essentially marching to their death, and knowing that one by one they were going to be dying, but still you just had to march. You just had to keep going. And the first movement of the concerto is very much that. It's a march. It is relentless. It doesn't let up. And you really get the feeling, based on the relationship between the orchestra, that something combative is going on, but that the cello doesn't really, doesn't really have a chance. And that's
so it's kind of, you start out as the victim.
You start out maybe you start out. I wouldn't go so far as to say the victim, because there's this overwhelming sense that that's just the world that you live in. You know, as an individual, you might be a victim, but you know, Russia, the Soviet Union at the time was very not into individualism, mm-hmm. and I think authoritarian rule has a way of bringing out the rebel in creative people. And Shostakovich, in some ways, I think, let that show more than Prokofiev in the directness of how he approached that. But in other ways, he was never very fantastical compared to Prokofiev.
Right.
Yeah. He's not really having the sort of the color palettes, but it's, again, more in the direction of Perrot, maybe, although really grounded in his experience and not spirituality, but very direct, very direct. So the cello could be a person, and the orchestra can be not even necessarily his oppressor, or her oppressor, but just the overwhelming feeling that it doesn't matter, that the cello doesn't matter. So that's there. It's relentless. He doesn't give up. Push as hard as you want. It just, you can't change anything. It just keeps going.
Wow. That's a great thing. The first movement of the Shostakovich. Well, if you don't mind, continue that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. It does. It's one of my favorite things about playing concertos, and it is probably my favorite thing to do, is that you get to live this relationship of an individual and a group. And people bring it out in so many different ways. Shostakovich does pull the horn out of the orchestra for big solos in both the first and the second movement. And in the second movement, the strings are creating this beautiful, heartbreaking sound. And at times it's warm. Towards the end of the movement, it's very cold. In between, there's a lot of drama that goes on, but it is still this feeling now, with maybe not the obsessive rhythm and relentlessness of a march, but with the crying and the wanting to be heard and the despair, more of the, maybe we're not quite at despair yet.
Martin, in the second movement?
Yeah, in the second movement.
There's a little bit of despair, though. I mean,
there's
to
some.
Me, you know.
Well, the third movement is where the despair is full.
Right.
But definitely in the second movement,
to show,
it's going there.
There's a moment of, there's certain orchestra writing in the second movement where I feel like there is a little bit of that anguish that started to come through because of the certain crescendos
anguish,
that we have to
yeah.
do. And then it's just almost like it's a little bit of crying out.
Definitely. And the struggle it's a different tone, the struggle there. And the third movement is very interesting because cadenzas traditionally are where the orchestra would stop and the soloist would improvise on the themes of the concerto and then go back in. And by the time of Beethoven, some of these were being written out a little bit. Shostakovich took it to the extreme. There's a cadenza in the Shostakovich cello concerto, but it's what, 6 or 7 minutes?
Yeah, it's like it's like an entire movement.
It's well, it is. Right? Yeah, it is. The third movement is cello right. alone. It's yep. very. It's not an. It can feel. It should feel improvisatory and real. And that's where the despair. You know, you're alone. The sound of the cello is alone. You've got a whole orchestra sitting there, and it's not a show off moment, as virtuosic as it gets. It is all about expressing this feeling, and the way that the orchestra comes back in is so incredibly frightening.
Yes.
I think it's one of the coolest.
Frightening is a great word, yeah.
I thought maybe those things don't go together when you're in the abstract, frightening and cool, but when you're yeah, when you're on
true.
Stage playing
yeah.
a cello concerto,
yep.
you want to cool. scare people a little bit. It's
yeah.
great.
And then, so there's an overview of the Shostakovich cello concerto. You know what, let's do, you brought along your cello, you agreed
yeah.
to play some unaccompanied cello music in our lovely sounding studio. So if you don't mind doing that, and then we'll come back and talk about all kinds of other things related and unrelated. So far, have you decided what you're probably going to play, or will you decide on the way into the room?
Well, that's the thing, is we talked about some beautiful music, and now we've been talking about Shostakovich.
Right.
I feel like I should probably play a little bit of the cadenza.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, yeah.
Well, why not? If
okay,
you don't mind,
all right.
We've
I'm gonna,
just talked about it.
It's not radio friendly, but hey, what
it's
are we here for?
That's right.
It's
okay.
People, it's human friendly.
Yes, right.
There you go. Okay, thanks. Josh Roman is heading out to play that long cello cadenza, as he said, as Mark Eco was responding to. It's essentially a movement of the piece.
Yes,
yeah.
And you know he did that in the violin concerto as mm-hmm. well, the first violin concerto, same kind of thing. So
here yeah. we go. We'll let him get ready, and here comes this cadenza from the Shostakovich First Cello Concerto.
Thank you.
So there it is. There's that sense of the very plaintive cadenza from the cello cadenza from the Shostakovich First Cello Concerto, played for us in the studio by our guest Joshua Roman. And as a good anticipation of the concert, Saturday night, 8 o'clock, Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock at the Fox for this concert of Prokofiev, Shostakovich, and Arvo Pärt. Thank you. That was just a perfect thing that we followed the discussion with that.
Yeah, it's pretty bleak, and I wasn't warmed up, but it's hard to think of, I'm not just going to pop in and play some unrelated thing, which seemed like a good idea, but that's the despair in the Shostakovich Cello Concerto.
Well, thinking of, maybe being in Russia and having no heat in World War II or something like that, then not being warmed up and all that just adds to it, doesn't it?
True. Yeah, you just got to grab and go.
Yeah. And let's talk, Joshua Roman, run through the quick biography of your life so far.
Oh, gosh.
When you were the young kid doing the Seattle Symphony principal cellist gig, did that work? Did they accept a young kid coming in there?
Yeah, they were the ones who voted and chose me, and so I felt so welcomed by that. But then also when I actually showed up, that initial vote of confidence was turned into so many wonderful and beautiful interactions with people. I still have a lot of friends there. I was there for their first concert with the new music director, Ludovic Morlot, years ago. I was there for his last concert. I was there for the first subscription concert of their new music director, Thomas Dalsgaard. So many wonderful relationships in that orchestra. That's a beautiful, beautiful time in my life.
And in that sense of lineage, you've probably met the new young kid in the cello section of the Seattle Symphony. That really young Asian.
Well, they've got several. Lots of young people in the cello section.
Okay. Yeah.
Nathan and Eric, Mika.
I'm not getting his name right now. But anyway, it's real vital. And, we're seeing that in a lot of orchestras. A lot of young faces. And when you think of the Berlin Philharmonic and you see all the young people in that orchestra.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. But then you've taken off and not looked back, including constantly going in directions. What about this composing thing?
Well, the composing thing is interesting because I didn't do it on purpose. I'll see if I can give the briefest version of the story possible, but there's a wonderful actor, Anna Deavere Smith, who, if you watched The West Wing, you would see as the secretary of, what was it, defense or something.
Yeah, but she does these multiple character things.
Right. Yeah. So she does all this. You might see her on TV shows, but her main sort of artistic endeavor is these one-woman shows where she interviews people around a certain subject. I think the breakout one for her was in the early 90s with the LA race riots. So interview a Korean grocer, a gangbanger, a police officer, all these different kinds of people. And she'll take portions of their interviews, which are all videotaped, and learn to really act out and essentially become those people. So when you watch a performance, you're seeing verbatim these people's perspectives played out. And because she's the one bringing it to you and it's done in that fashion, there's a very powerful through line. So she decided to share the stage, and Michael Tilson Thomas suggested that she contact me. And so we started with this very warm relationship. And I was going to use Bach as another character in the piece, not just background music, but another character. The timing was getting weird, though, because we'd want 1 minute or 2 minutes, and Bach didn't quite fit. So I suggested we'd take a listen to all the other existing solo cello music, and I sent her Ligeti and Crumb and all this other stuff. And it just wasn't working, and so we were sitting there in rehearsal one day, and she had listened to these things to her credit. She was really everything that I gave her, she was, let's make it work. But it was not working. And so I just played something. It's like, well, I know what we're going for right here. It's this sound. And she was like, yes, it's that sound. Why don't you do that? But that's not a real piece. I was just demonstrating. I got to find something that's like, well, why can't you do that again? And it took a few minutes, but I realized there was no justification for me not to just do it. So I started just playing what we knew went there, and it became music. And I sort of half improvised that show the many times that we did it, and it got more and more set. And then the following year, the organization who had commissioned this project wanted another solo cello piece, so they asked me for recommendations. And when none of the composers could do it in the short amount of time, they said, why don't you do it? And again, I found myself in the position of saying, well, that thing that I did last year wasn't really composing. And I couldn't explain why what I had done was not composing. And so I ended up just actually taking the project on and writing a piece. And since then, I've actually really come into it as my own. I love expressing. I love the idea that if I think something expresses an emotion or sounds interesting, that I can share that with people and see their response. It's incredible. Wow. It's absolutely incredible.
Well, time says that I have to stop you right there, but that's okay, because that is about the best origin story I've ever heard. So thank you, Joshua Roman, who's playing Shostakovich, and Morihiko Nakahara, who's conducting Shostakovich, Prokofiev and Parrot, this weekend with the symphony. It's going to be a great weekend. Thanks
a
lot for both of you.
Thank you.